This is Andy.
And this is Matt.
And you're listening to
The Hop Podcast with No Name.
What a dumb name.
It's so stupid. Let's go. Episode 30. Don't laugh. It's not funny.
Sorry.
I'm excited. Do you want to know why?
Yes,
because you did not know I was going to hit record. And I think this is both the most prepared and least prepared we've ever been for an episode. We have a direction. We have some ideas. We think it's important.
We have no idea.
We have no idea if it's actually important. But yeah, this is so episode 38.
What here
are
we go.
What are we doing?
What are we?
Tell the audience, because I definitely know.
So... I wanted to tell a story of applying hop concepts outside of work.
Thank you for specifying, because you kind of paused after outside and I was like, okay, you did them I was not standing. In the building.
Yeah. And so in order to do that, you asked me why I thought it was important to tell.
Yeah. That's exactly how I said it.
No, I mean, that's what I heard.
Yeah, go ahead.
You asked me why, in some way, I thought it was important to tell. And I think my answer was, well, we say a lot that you can use these subjects outside of work and they're not just specific to work, but most of the time we're just talking about it inside of work. And it seems important, like for somebody to fully grasp what the ideas are, it feels important to know that they're applicable in many, many different situations. And oftentimes when we're starting, like when we're teaching a new group, I'll say some crazy comment, like I eat, sleep, think, drink this subject. But then it's always not, it's not well, no, really.
Then there's always a bit of a silence and then, and then someone keeps going.
But sometimes it's not clear how you could do that. Meaning I thought that when I first started to talk about the subject, that it was really clear how you could make the leap from, this is a thing that you use with an organization around safety. I thought it was pretty clear how you could then apply the same concepts to anything outside of safety, but within the operation, right? Like quality or, you know, output. And it turns out that that's easy for some people to make that leap in their mind. And for others, we've learned that it doesn't feel like there's a directly applicable line. And so then my guess would be thinking that it's easy to then figure out how you'd apply these outside of work is even more of a leap for some and maybe not for others. And so that's, I guess, why it felt important to talk to, is because maybe I'm making a lot of assumptions as to how people can use these concepts in a lot of different places. And making those assumptions is not helpful for anyone.
You are.
Because, not helpful.
Because I think we've talked about this a bunch, and typically it's when we're traveling because there's a lot of long drives and I just talk. But it's I am the other group that when I learn something, I tend to learn it in a discrete area and I apply it in that area. And I struggle when I have to go from, this is a topic about industrial safety, which I know nothing about. I know some about now, but and then saying, how would I apply this to a conversation outside of work at the grocery store or with my girlfriend or raising children? If I ever did, like that to me seems so foreign and difficult. Mm. And for you, you're always like, what do you mean? This is,
you just do it.
You just do it. And so,
which is not helpful.
If you're listening and you're like, oh, well, I'm in that other group that struggles to apply it in other places. Maybe this is not for me. Not true. You can actually have a podcast about it if you just show up. So yeah, just feel like if you struggle to learn about a topic in a certain area and then apply it other places, you can do it. It takes time. And I'm a part of that group as well.
Yeah. So I guess that's
I didn't
what
like
we
how genuine
about.
I had to be just to call out my own. I don't know. I'm a little insecure about that sometimes.
I give you like 7 points for it.
I'm just building my way out of that debt.
Yeah, you are. All right. So to talk about it, should we also share with folks some of our really bad analogies and see what they think about them?
They're awful.
They are
but
awful.
But I am less self-conscious about that. So let's do it.
Because in order to help explain to people the mindset of HOP and the fact that it's right, it's not a program. We've talked about that a bunch, right? It's not a program. It's an operating philosophy. What does that even mean? We try to use some analogies to help, and none of them have landed well, I don't think.
Speak for yourself. When I get the right audience, I think mine lands pretty well.
And the reason we try to use the analogy is so that we can get ourselves to a place of recognizing that as we're learning about these concepts, you can apply them in a bunch of different places, because what's changing is not the tools that we're going to be using or the language that we're using. I mean, those things change over time, but the reason that they're changing is because how we're seeing things, how we're thinking about the world around us is changing. And we try to explain that in a couple different ways. You want to give one analogy? You want me to give one?
You can go first, because you like to use your own in the training and you don't let me use mine. So go ahead. you go.
All right. So one of the analogies we use is that it wasn't a long time ago in human history.
Relatively speaking,
right, that a large group of people believed that what you did sort of on a Wednesday could affect whether or not a volcano was going to erupt on a Thursday, that human action was going to directly affect the volcano erupting. And because that was the belief system, people took action to try to prevent the volcano from erupting, up into including things like sacrificing fish and having lots of different fish, with the hopes that that would make the volcano not erupt. And then the thought process change, like the mind shift, is that for most people around the world, the recognition of how volcanoes erupt and what has to happen geologically for that to happen, and what we should be looking for, like seismic activity and different actually soil composition, to know if something's going to erupt. We learned that information and therefore became far more interested in that than we did in the ritual around trying to make the volcano not erupt. And so it was the thought process change that changed first, and then the behavior, the physical action that people took changed after that. And so the analogy that we're trying to, which it doesn't land all the time, this analogy. It doesn't land. It's not landing now, I'm sure.
No, let's do a demonstration. Ready? So all you have to say is, I'm just sacrificing fish, right?
Okay.
So before this thought process changed, if I was your neighbor and I walked over and said, hey, Andrew, what are you doing?
I'm just sacrificing fish.
That's a great idea. You should do more of that. Actually, I'm going to do more of that. Then the thought process changed. The behavior doesn't. For some reason.
You sure?
So I walk over and you're still doing the same behavior.
I'm just sacrificing fish.
What are you talking about? Why are you doing that? That's not going to change anything.
Yeah.
So it just would be ridiculous.
Correct.
To not change behavior.
Sure.
Based on the change in thought process.
So that's the relationship we're trying to help illustrate, of the thought process then changes behavior, but you don't have to force the behavior change, because the behavior change is going to come from the shift in thought process.
Yeah. Doing the old behavior would just, it wouldn't make any sense.
Right. It would feel illogical to you if your thought process changed.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's your analogy? Is it better than mine?
I don't know. I was listening to you give yours and I was like, wow, that sounds crazy. So let's see. My analogy is this. So again, we're going back to the idea that when you change your thought process, your behavior would naturally change. And so the way I describe it is, if you're a big fishing fan, don't attack me.
Oh, absolutely attack
please.
Him. I want the
please
email
don't.
Flooded with Matt, you have misinformation about fishing.
Yeah.
I'm just hoping that's what comes out of this.
Maybe you will. Okay. Maybe I'll learn something. That's fine. So if you were taught that all fish that you're going to catch when you're going fishing are opportunist eaters.
What does that mean?
You need to have the bait dangling at eye level.
Okay.
It shouldn't move because the only way fish eat is if they see it and it's an easy target.
Okay.
The way you'd go fishing is you would do everything you can to make the bait look as appetizing and as even as possible.
Mm.
If over time you learned that fish are actually hunters and they prefer going after and hunting a target, well, you would entirely change the way you fished. You would no longer want your bait to sit at eye level and just lay there. You'd want it to be moving, and that it had to be something that the fish has to chase and catch. So you would change your fishing style entirely. Like a 180 difference, because you now know that fish are behave differently. And so if you did the same behavior, it would look ridiculous to leave your bobber and your bait just sitting there, because
whatever fish you wanted to catch wouldn't want that. Okay, here's a question for you. Is a prerequisite requirement for any of these analogies that fish are related?
Ooh. You know,
I'm just realizing that both of them have fish involved.
And I also don't like seafood or fish.
That's true.
So just know that I'm being very brave in talking about this.
All right. I hope people teach us a lot about fishing based on this.
Yeah. I have a lot to learn. And it seems like one of those areas where I can learn about a discrete thing and keep it as a discrete thing. This is fishing. Don't need to apply it anywhere else. This is just fishing.
All right. So those are our two analogies. If you have other analogies that you all use, we would be more than happy to learn from you as to what helps people recognize or be able to at least have some sort of mental model of the fact that hop is the mental model. That's better than what we created. So when you shift your thought process, then applying the concepts outside of just safety can feel easy to do for some folks, right? Others, we need an example, right? We need to see it in order to understand how to apply the information. And so I guess that's why I wanted to share a completely non-work-related story, is for anyone like you who are in the space of, hey, this isn't easy for me to apply, even though I'm thinking differently. I'm having a hard time figuring out exactly how I would use it.
Yeah, because I was always just given the tool, and that was easy for me.
Like in anything so work-related?
If it was, let's say it was something not hop-related, that was just called bop. Someone would walk in and they would say, hey, there's this new idea, and the way you do bop, I hate this, is you, here's the checklist, mm-hmm. and you make sure this checklist
is done
every day.
Here's your bop checklist, yeah.
And then you're now doing bop.
Bop, yeah. The checklist itself becomes
and
the bop.
There's no way that checklist could live in the real world. It only could live in that discrete area where it was relevant to.
Sure, yeah.
And so with hop, it's not a checklist. It's not the tool. It's the change in thought process that makes whatever you're going to go do different.
Yeah. And the way that I found myself applying the concepts and then being like taking a mental note of, oh, I'm using hop concepts in this conversation, was with one of my children, the older one, if anyone's keeping track. And she came home from school. Actually, I picked her up from her school. And she had an incident at school where another one of the children had run over her hand with a pretty heavy tricycle. So she was laying out on the pavement and being traced by a child like with chalk. And while she was laying out there, a child on a tricycle came over and ran over her hand. And actually, I mean, it hurt a lot. And she had some pretty big scrapes on her hand from it. Physically, right, she was repairing just fine. But the next day before we went to school, she told me that she was mad at the person who ran over her hand and that she didn't want to talk to them anymore. And when I asked her why, she said, well, because they did it on purpose. They ran over my hand on purpose. And I said, oh, how did you know it was on purpose? And they said, well, because the teacher asked them and they said that they ran over my hand on purpose. And so I'm mad and I don't want to talk to them anymore.
Seemingly fair.
Right? Yeah. And so
I can tell you that if you ran over my hand with a tricycle, one, where'd you get the tricycle from? And two, I'd be pretty upset.
And so I could have just left it there and been like validated her emotion of like, yeah, that's fair. But my hope was that I could teach a little bit of, you know, what it means to understand a situation and what it means to have forgiveness and reconcile and also make sure that we're solving the right problem. And so I asked her if she thought that they hurt her on purpose, right? So They might have run over her hand on purpose. That happens, right? We're talking about 4 and 5 year olds, some younger, so up 3 all the way to 5. But I asked, I said, do you think that they meant to hurt you on purpose? And she said, well, no, I don't think so. And so I asked her how she knew. Well, how do you know that he didn't mean to hurt you on purpose? Do you see how hard I tried to say they the entire time and then just messed it up right there? I was trying to keep it as anonymous as possible. And I just...
Cat's out of the bag.
So a little boy ran over her hand. And she said, well, he's really nice to me. And I said, okay, he never pushes you or yells at you or screams at you or... She said, no, he's...
I'm going to struggle. I have to say this.
Yeah.
And just know that I recognize these are children. Sounds like he's not a person problem. I feel like the behavior in general is not someone who's malicious right. And trying to hurt everybody.
Correct.
Understanding their kids, and please don't... You can message me about the fishing thing. Just know that I use that to illustrate a hop concept. I don't think children that young really fall into that category.
Into the category, right. But it doesn't seem like this is a pattern in his behavior at all. And so she was like, no, he's really nice. And so then we spent some time talking about the fact that it probably for him, like if he ran over her hand on purpose, he might have not understood the consequence, meaning he might have not known it was going to hurt her. He just saw a hand there. And because he doesn't have enough experience with what it's like to have a hand run over by a tricycle, in his mind at that moment in time, it just looked like something interesting to do without a recognition of that this would also hurt the person who's attached to the hand. And so then we started to talk about actually the words that you would use in this hop space is the second victim. Of course, I didn't use that terminology with a 4-year-old, but the fact that he probably was surprised when it hurt her, and he might be struggling too, figuring out how they're supposed to go forward. And so I asked whether or not they had time to talk to each other after the event happened, and they said no, that they hadn't talked to each other. And so she, at that point in time, actually asked me if I could help talk to him because she wanted to talk to him. So we went from her not wanting to talk to him at all in the conversation. And it was about, I don't know, 2 minutes later that going through this recognition of he didn't have any intention to hurt her or probably didn't have intention to hurt her, that it was worth having a conversation and learning about that so that they could be friends again. Yeah. And so then we ended up going to the school and I asked the teachers to be able to facilitate a discussion with her and this little boy so that they could talk to each other about what happened. And what I found was really interesting in that moment is that I explained why I'd had the conversation to the teacher, right? I explained why I'd had the conversation with Penelope in the morning and what I was hoping that they could do during the conversation. And I wasn't supposed to be able to have it myself because theoretically I wasn't supposed to know who the kid was that ran over her hand. Obviously she told me, but I wasn't supposed to know. So I was hoping that they would be able to actually facilitate the discussion. And what I ran into was that the teacher wasn't sure how to have that discussion. And what she told me was, hey, we can, but I don't really know what they're going to be able to say to each other because he told me that he ran over her hand on purpose. So from her perspective, it was also this sort of irreconcilable, he did it on purpose. It's fine that she's mad because she should be mad. And I don't really know, apart from the sort of forcing him to say that he was sorry, I don't really know where to take the conversation. And so I actually spent some time explaining the same thing to the teacher of, yeah, he might have done it on purpose, but I'm not sure that he understood that it was going to hurt her. And he might also be in the same space of needing to have a conversation in order to try to figure out how they move forward because he was also surprised about the outcome of the fact that she was injured from his actions.
I have mentioned this before that I went to school to be a teacher. And then I didn't because there was a hiring freeze in New York at the time. I am seeing that I wasn't cut out for younger kids. First of all, I went to school to be a high school teacher. But second of all, you have some very patient teachers at that school because to even listen to you come in and say, I want to help you teacher facilitate a conversation. I mean, granted they asked for some help, but, is just great that they were open to that conversation. I will leave it at that.
Matt's looking at me being like, you would be the nightmare parent.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
but well-intentioned. I mean, the end of the story is that you're trying to teach the children in a way that's going to help them long-term.
Yeah.
Not just if someone does something, you respond and that's your right.
And that's your, that's
whether you have all the context or not.
Yeah. So anyway, they're friends now again. So that's good.
Good for them.
Yeah. They might've gotten over it without me though, to be clear. Right.
Oh,
I have no idea.
Absolutely.
Right.
So don't take any of the credit.
I don't. Yeah. But that was, that happened a couple of weeks ago. And my thought was, oh, this is hop stuff, but trying to teach it at a sort of a young age to a child who then hopefully can be able to use that thought process as they get older to be able to navigate the world.
So what I'm hearing is that when I first learned about this stuff, it was, hey, here's a topic or a tool that we use in safety. That was my first initial thought. Mm. And I was like, I don't know anything about this. And now, 2.5 years later, here's how we teach children what to do.
Buckle up.
Yeah. So for me, it was a huge leap to go from discrete area to, okay, you know, it's not just a tool. Probably the first thing I had to learn. It doesn't just have this checklist that comes with it or this, you know, here's what learning teams are, step one, step two, step three. Then it was, okay, it's not even just a safety piece. It is, you know, bigger than that. And then it's not even just industry. And it's not even just work. And then now it's kind of how we apply it across the board. If we change our thought process, it no longer makes sense to sacrifice fish. It no longer makes sense to only use a bobber and let the bait hang. I don't know. I'm working on it. But the behavior would just be different. And there is no prescribed behavior. It's just we would change based on a change in thought process.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. So we'll see if that's helpful to anybody.
Yeah, if you have better analogies, which, wow, I'm sure you do, feel free to send them in. We will, if we get any, we'll share them.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool. All right. Thanks for listening.
Well, that's it.
Yep, another one in the books. We did it.
If you want to send us any of your thoughts, actually, fling us any of your thoughts, you can do so at the website www.hoppodcast.com.
That's hoppodcast.com.
That's still such a stupid name.
We look forward to hearing from you. Thanks for listening.